Is humor on hold? I don't know. I was just listening to NPR, so I have to reconsider everything I was going to do. Ladies and gentlemen, just one more thought. We're getting back to our jobs. My friend Chris said, it's the new normal. The new normal. That's where we're at. So we're getting back to our jobs as we were adjured by President Bush this week. Did you see his appearance at O'Hare Airport in Chicago? Trying to encourage, while at the same time allowing two Air Force generals the ability to decide whether to shoot down any civilian airliner, President Bush was encouraging us to get back in the air. Mixed messages department. And he said, you know, get back in the air, get on board, get back to some of our fine destination spots, go to Disney World in Florida. George W. Bush said, I don't have the tape here, but I swear on a stack of promos, he said, go to Disney World in Florida. The only product placement I've ever heard in a presidential speech, these Disney people are damn good. Anyway, one more note about Dan Rather's appearance on David Letterman's comeback show. I know it's now in the mists of time, but I went back and watched it this week. And Dan's entire, you know, Dan is brought on to give context, Dan's been in Afghanistan, ladies and gentlemen. He's there to, you know, he's not there to entertain. He's there to bring understanding to the people. And Dave asked him, now what? Why would anybody do it? What are the motivations of these people? And Dan's entire answer is, quote, they hate us. Now, you wonder where Dan has been doing his research. That gave me a clue. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you were a fan of the late and unlamented XFL football thing that was co-produced by NBC and the World Wrestling Federation. It was that kind of goofy football league that was born last spring and died this past summer. And one of the things they did in the XFL was they encouraged players not to have their own last names on the back of their uniforms, but rather to replace them with nicknames that would endear them to the fans. And the one who was best known for his nickname, proof is that, of course, nobody, I don't think one person in 1,000 who had even heard of him can remember his real name. The one who was best known for his nickname was a guy who wrote on the back of his uniform, he hate me. So that's where Dan does his research, watching the XFL. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're all getting back to doing our jobs. Those of us in the media especially. When I was a kid, among my favorite entertainers were a couple of comedians named Bob and Ray, and they came from New York. And sometimes my local station would broadcast their show, and sometimes it wouldn't. And it just drove me crazy. When in my mind, some guy sitting in an office on Melrose was deciding whether or not I could hear my favorite show. Now, some people are getting back to doing their jobs. You know, the idea of localism in broadcasting is a peculiarly American invention. In Britain, if you're on the air, you're on the air everywhere. Same thing in Australia, same thing in every country I've ever been to. But here, we give these local program directors and managers the power to decide whether you, sitting wherever you are, can hear me sitting wherever I am, or can watch Bill Maher. Now, Bill Maher has been taken back off the air in Washington, D.C. The managers of the TV station back there are just doing their job, keeping people in Washington from possibly being, you know, offended as they go about their work. And I've been asked a number of times in the media this week for my reaction to the whole Bill Maher thing. And I'd been reacting sort of hypothetically until somebody emailed me and said, did you know, speaking of me, that you haven't been on the air in Washington for 3 weeks? So the fine local station managers in Washington, D.C., I guess are doing their job too, even though I didn't call anybody cowardly. But if I was ever going to, I sure know where to start. Hello, welcome to the show.
but I know it won't be long. Sitting here in limbo, like a bird without a song. Well, they're putting up resistance, but I know that my faith will lead me on. Sitting here in limbo, waiting for the dice to roll. Sitting here in limbo, got some time to search my soul. Well, they're putting up resistance, but I know that my faith will lead me on. I don't know where life will lead me, but I know where I've been. I can't say what life will show me, but I know. This little boy is moving on. Sitting here in limbo, waiting for the tide to flow. Sitting here in limbo, knowing that I have to go. But I know that my faith will lead me on. I can't say what life will show me, but I know what I've seen. I can't say where life will lead me, but I know where I've been. Tried my hand that love and friendship, but all that is past and gone. This little boy is moving on. Sitting here in limbo, waiting for the tide to flow. Sitting here in limbo, knowing that I have to go.
Sitting not in limbo, but in the home of the homeless from Santa Monica, the edge of America. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the show. Spokesman for Bill Maher says his office has no idea why Politically Incorrect has been now announced to be off the air indefinitely in Washington. So I know the feeling, babe. In case you missed it, White House spokesman, presidential spokesman, Ari Fleischer weighed in on Bill Maher's comments. If you don't know what Bill Maher said, what, should I get into it? No, forget it. Forget what he said. He just said something. And a shock jock in Texas sort of misinterpreted it. Because he's doing his job, just trying to get some ink. We're all doing our jobs. So here's Ari Fleischer doing his job. Quote, the reminder is to all Americans that they need to watch what they say, watch what they do, and that this is not a time for remarks like that. It never is. Unquote. So that's the word from the White House. Watch what you say and watch what you do. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, how about this country? Isn't it wild? Some things will not be going on as normal. This from the website that never pays its writers, Inside.com. The much-anticipated recount of Florida ballots from the Presidential Election Commission by that unprecedented consortium of major news organizations, that's on indefinite hold. The material was to have been released to the news organizations a week ago Monday. Would have been actually made public this week. Several people involved said the terrorist attacks raised two significant problems, a sudden lack of resources to analyze the data about the ballots, and a queasy sense that now is not the right time to publish information that could well question the legitimacy of the nation's commander-in-chief. On the other hand, it took Al Gore until yesterday to crawl out of his hole and say he supports the president. So, you know, maybe it. Where was Al Gore? I was going to, you know, he finally showed up at a Jefferson Jackson day. I think that was it. Or Lincoln, you know, it wasn't Lincoln. It was some fundraising dinner in Iowa. Iowa? Isn't that where they start their presidential campaign? But until then, you know, Tom Daschle had said we support the president. Dick Gebhardt had said we support the president. All sorts of Democrats had lined up to say that. Al Gore was wondering what to wear to Iowa, I guess. I don't know. But it seemed interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, the red carpet will be missing and stars will trade tuxedos for business suits in a muted Emmy Awards ceremony intended to reflect the nation's mood. That'll teach the terrorists. No red carpet. Walter Cronkite, not Ellen DeGeneres, will make the opening remarks at the awards ceremony, which will be a week from today. On-camera celebrity arrivals will be abandoned and fans will not be able to scream for their favorite actors from bleachers. Stars are being advised to dress down. Quote, according to Don Mischer, executive producer, it's difficult for the women because they've been planning their gowns for a long time. But at least we're having an Emmys, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know what I'm saying. I'm saying we're having an Emmys. That's not really now. What during the 90s, during the 80s and the 90s, what's one of the systems that most regularly was being starved of money? And we knew about it. We would read these stories in the paper and tut-tut a little bit and say, isn't that too bad? When's the Gucci sale? The system I have in mind is America's public health system. You know, we here in Southern California had a bunch of trauma centers closed right after the big earthquake. Remember that? Remember the earthquake? Trauma centers, you know, places that could treat a lot of people with serious injuries in an emergency situation, closed down for lack of funds. Well, as they say in Washington, guess what? Dateline Washington, the United States is inadequately prepared to confront bioterrorist attacks, according to a broad range of health experts. The nation must develop new vaccines and treatments, they say, but it must also fortify its fragile public health infrastructure, the first line of defense in detecting and containing biological threats. And when's the Gucci sale? From Time Magazine, this apropos of last week's apologies, religion writer David Van Bima. He writes, the most pressing conundrum is the one Jerry Falwell broached so divisively when he suggested that God allowed America to be attacked because of the actions of feminists, homosexuals, and abortionists. Falwell later recanted, but his view is echoed faintly by Franklin Graham, Billy Graham's son. While saying these tragedies are not part of God's original plan, he cites the biblical history of the Israelites, who would turn away from God and God would allow a calamity. Unquote. See also Pat Boone on Larry King Friday night, who said kind of the same thing. God got ticked off. We turned away from him, and so denied us his protection, was Pat Boone's way of putting it. Although, of course, he doesn't support Jerry Falwell because, you know, some shock jocks might get after you for that. This week's apologies. Well, guy was fired. I don't know if he's apologized yet. Grants Pass, Oregon. The Daily Courier has fired a columnist who wrote about President Bush hiding in a Nebraska hole instead of returning to Washington immediately after the terrorist attacks. Columnist Dan Guthrie said publisher Dennis Mack fired him from his job because of negative reaction to his column, which is entitled Dog Watch. The publisher denied the column was the reason for the dismissal, but declined to elaborate, saying it was a private personnel matter. This was a column attacking President Bush for getting on that plane and not immediately going to the White House. The original story released by the White House at the time was that the White House and Air Force One, they had credible reason to believe they were targets. This week, according to the Associated Press and CBS News, that turns out to be spin. But this guy got fired in the meantime. Also not apologizing yet. Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi. This makes George W. Bush, well, it. For those who think anybody elected to high office in a time of emergency will rise to the occasion and point with pride to George W. Bush, we have, as a contrary example, Silvio Berlusconi, a media magnate, well, there's your lesson right there, who this week said Western civilization is superior to Islam. He also said he hopes the West conquers Islamic civilization. Moderate politicians in Italy denounced him immediately. Berlusconi made the remarks on Italian television right after having a meeting with the heads of Germany and Russia. He told a news conference, quote, "We must be aware of the superiority of our civilization. In contrast with Islamic countries, a system that guarantees respect for religious and political rights, a system that has as its values understandings of diversity and tolerance." Well, he also claimed Western civilization is superior because it has at its core, and is its greatest value, freedom, which is not the heritage of Islamic culture. Berlusconi went on to say he trusts the West will continue to conquer peoples like it conquered communism, even if it means a confrontation with another civilization, the Islamic one, stuck where it was 1,400 years ago. Although, actually, I believe if he's being consistent, he means MMMMXXIIIIXVVVVVV years ago. Dateline Canada. Canada's on the march, ladies and gentlemen. A Canadian policeman who took his own tracking dog to the wreckage of the World Trade Center and is reported to have found a survivor has been suspended after it was found he was there without the knowledge of his employer. Jamie Symington of the Halifax Regional Police went to the scene of the disaster 2 weeks ago, was interviewed on local television in New York City after he helped to find a survivor, according to Canadian media reports. His superiors told Reuters they were amazed to discover he'd gone to the scene of devastation without permission. "We were unaware he was there, eh? We learned about it on TV, eh?" said Sergeant Brenda Zima, public relations officer at the Halifax Police. That's going to be a difficult job to do right about now. Zima, hey, have a Zima, won't you? Said Symington had been on leave for a personnel issue since last June. Oh, I see. Oh, well. And the timing of last Monday's suspension was difficult. She understands the public outcry about the decision, but she advised caution. "It's not as simple as it may seem. We have very good reasons, and the situation is complex in its nature." What isn't, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, I'll tell you what isn't. Actress-director Diane Keaton has purchased a home in Laguna Beach for about $1.7 million. Can we return to normal? Can we talk about some hot property? The house, which has 5 bedrooms and 4.5 baths and slightly more than 3,000 square feet, is on the ocean side of Pacific Coast Highway and is a short walk to the sand. Last year, she sold her Beverly Hills home, which she restored, to Madonna for $6.5 million. The Laguna home that Keaton purchased was not on the market. Well, how did she make him sell then? Singer Nick Carter of the Backstreet Boys has sold his Santa Ynez Valley home for its most recent listing price of $2.9 million. The 101-acre property with a 10,000-square-foot house, a pool, and a tennis court, which originally listed months ago at $3.3 million. Built about 9 years ago, the estate also has a small lake, a bar, and a guest apartment. The pop star, 21, spent so much time on the road he seldom used the property, although his family lived there. Okay, so the family has to move. And here's, ladies and gentlemen, for people who ask, why do you read this? Why do we know you find this column abstruse, but why do you read it? Here's why. Here's a piece of information I would have garnered nowhere else. I don't care how many gossip columns you read, ladies and gentlemen. I don't think you would have known this if you didn't read the real estate column in the Sunday Dog Trainer here in Los Angeles. Danny Sugarman, longtime manager of The Doors, okay, that's fact one, and his wife, Oliver North's former assistant, Fawn Hall. Now, who knew that? Who knew that somewhere in the world of real estate, The Doors and Oliver North had met in the persons of Danny Sugarman and Fawn Hall? I mean, that's almost worth paying for the newspaper right there. I said almost. Have put their Sunset Strip area house on the market at $995,000. The couple, married since 1993, plan to move to a slightly larger home nearby. The house they listed has two bedrooms and 1,400-plus square feet. The single-story home has city views from every room, a pool, a spa, and a deck, which overlooks the L.A. Basin, which is not easy to do. It's a very large basin. There's also a koi pond with a waterfall. Wilma Hall, Fawn Hall's mother, works for the CIA director. Okay. Man. Danny Sugarman and Fawn Hall. And Michael Feinstein, pianist Michael Feinstein, is listed as Laguna Beach home at just under $2.4 million. Diane Keaton could have bought that if only she'd known. Ladies and gentlemen, apropos of the dog trainer, the Chinese censors less than a week ago unblocked the websites of the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, and the BBC. Those websites have now been reblocked. China's Ministry of Public Security, much like the Washington affiliates of certain broadcast programs, refuses to explain its motivations. The reblocked sites again join a lengthy list of blocked media outlets that include CNN and the Atlanta Journal. So apparently, the Chinese are under the misapprehension that the Los Angeles Times is a news medium. However, I was in Australia a couple weeks ago where they had great fun with the fact that the LA Times printed an editorial denouncing the Prime Minister of Australia, John Hunt, for opposing the landing of some asylum seekers on Australian soil. They weren't arguing with the premise of the editorial. They were amused because the Prime Minister of Australia is named John Howard. They're just doing their job, folks.
Can't hide, man can't run. ceremony.
This is the show, maybe still. More reassurance, ladies and gentlemen, that about the new normal. The order of the Emmy Awards presentation ceremony will be changed. Usually, the show starts with honors for Best Supporting Comedy Actor. This year, Drama Awards will be handed out first. I think that's so appropriate. I don't know about you. You gotta wait an hour into an Emmys before you start. Dateline Washington, from the Washington Post, Mike Wallace was overheard phoning sources, musing about the possibility of accompanying the Reverend Jesse Jackson on a peace mission to Afghanistan. Said Wallace to the Post, "I didn't talk to Jesse, but I've had a conversation on the telephone with an individual who was in the Taliban. I called him in Kandahar, as a matter of fact, and asked him whether Jesse was going to be welcome to Afghanistan. And he said, to Pakistan, yes, to Afghanistan, we'll see. Probably, I said to somebody that we're trying to see about the possibility of going along with Jesse, and that all could have been overheard." Unquote. Wallace added, "If Jackson does go, it will probably be to bring home two American women jailed by the Taliban for allegedly trying to convert Muslims to Christianity." For lunch, this was Thursday of this week, Wallace told the Washington Post he had a cheddar and ham sandwich. On Yom Kippur, he was asked. "I'm a Reformed Jew," Wallace explained. Jackson, when asked about that, said, quote, "I'm sure Mike will atone for it and apologize to God." With a chuckle, Jackson ventured, "Like all of us, Mike is just trying to be a better person," unquote. I don't think that's all there is to this.
"Well, Reverend Jackson, I have to admit something to you.
Uh-huh.
I've been in New York since the days when the subway was still above ground, and I'd never heard of this restaurant."
"Well, Mike, there are many times when a public person needs a private place.
Mm.
Nobody who doesn't go to the Rucker Games knows about this place. This is deep as Harlem."
"Well, I kind of figured that out when my limo driver said he'd wait for me at 96th Street.
Def Ham has been here since the mid-1980s, and all that time the only disturbance that's ever occurred here was one night when the fat fryer went on the fritz."
"All right, well, you can guide me through the menu, Reverend, while we beat around the bush before getting down to brass tacks."
"Mike, you combine a rare and refreshing candor. The flair for the familiar phrase."
"Thank you. What's braised pig butt.
That's actually the butt of the shoulder. Mm. They like putting people a little bit back on their heels with the menu here.
So pork cheeks.
Just the same part of the pig that the ham comes from. Mm. I know you eat ham.
Yes. And pig testicles?
Mm. That's really pig testicles. They're very crunchy.
Yes, well, why wouldn't they be?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Reverend. Are we going to Afghanistan or not?
Mike, I've talked to the Taliban.
As have I.
All right. Have you talked to Mullah Omar?
I have not.
All right, then. What we've gotten them to do so far is to withhold denial that they invited me. You know, a trip of 10,000 miles begins with a single step.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken that step.
Yes, well, because obviously 60 Minutes remains extremely interested in sending a crew along with you.
And what, you'd fly to the Pakistan border to do the wraparounds?
Well, I might actually go into Afghanistan, you know, for an hour or so.
Uh-huh.
If I didn't, Dan Rather would never let me hear the end of it. You know, it's been at least 15 years since Brother Rather went to Afghanistan.
Uh-huh.
He still hasn't had his safari jacket cleaned.
Well, let me put my cars where the sun do shine, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
ABC wants to come with us, and they want it bad. You know, they'd have Ted Koppel get a crew cut if they could cover Operation Pash.
Operation Pash?
Uh-huh. The leading ethnic group in Afghanistan are the Pashtun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we honor them. We honor all ethnicities.
Well, of course, ABC's a fine organization.
Uh-huh.
You know, personally, I think they've been leaning a little pro-Sharpton in their coverage.
Uh-huh. What do you mean?
Oh, you know, just an interview here, a
uh-huh.
profile there that
uh-huh.
tends to play Al Sharpton as the new Jesse Jackson. Crackling pig toes.
Yeah, that's literal, too.
Oh.
The new Jesse Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know the old model was ready to be traded in. I can't make assurances about the rest of the chassis, but I can assure you the dipstick is in perfect condition.
Well, you know, obviously we're going to call this as we see it straight down the middle. I mean,
uh-huh.
that's why we still have a shred of our credibility left. But,
uh-huh.
you know, it goes without saying when Michael Mann makes the film version of all of this, I would think you'd probably be played by Denzel.
Uh-huh. Or Fishburne.
Yeah. The fricassee of hog scrotum?
I haven't had that.
Mm.
That comes in a very rich gravy here. I don't think my heart needs that.
Uh-huh. I don't think my heart needs to eat at all right now. But so look, that's it? Only ABC's in this game?
Well, of course, I have family loyalty to CNN. You know, they've kept my show on for a long time without anybody noticing.
Oh,
so
please, Reverend, CNN.
Well,
I mean, their so-called stars are the people we fired. You know, I'm sorry, but Paula Zahn couldn't read the coffee maker, let alone the teleprompter.
Well,
that's not what you want on a mission of this seriousness.
Well, of course it is serious.
Mm-hmm.
There are 8 Western civilians to be brought home. You know, I did think I might stop off in Bangkok on the way back, and I tell you that now because that's not open for coverage.
No, of course.
All right.
Well, look, shall I tell my fearless leader that we have an understanding?
Well, you're going to order something, aren't you?
Well,
I mean, it would hurt their feelings terribly if the great Mike Wallace didn't eat something while he was here.
All right, I'll have the pork bisque.
That's a good choice, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's going to be a couple weeks before we can get all the whatever the letters they have in their alphabet dotted and or crossed. You know, that's plenty of time for us to work all this out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my one concern about doing an exclusive with CBS is I don't want this mission to end up looking like Jesse Jackson goes on Survivor.
No, believe me, Reverend. As I think we've proved during these last couple of weeks, we're still capable of projecting a certain amount of dignity when we put our minds to it,
uh-huh.
and we're pressed to the wall.
All right, Michael, I think aside from various parts of the pig. We're talking the same language here.
Yes, sir.
This would be 60 minutes, not 60 minutes two.
That's what I'm empowered to offer, yes, sir.
Because that's a deal breaker.
No, look, if you want to wait before ordering, I can make a cell phone call from here.
No, that's fine. I think we're fine.
Huh?
You know, Mike, we go back a long way.
Well,
back to the time when I was saving souls and you were selling cigarettes. Tell you what, let's eat.
I'll just have a Diet Coke.
And meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, as we say in the news media, because referring to something that happened at a totally different time, an open letter has been published, signed by 41, and I'm quoting here, foreign policy scholars, including Jean Kirkpatrick, the publisher of the Weekly Standard, Rupert Murdoch-owned mag, and the editor-in-chief of the New Republic, demanding that George W. Bush target Hezbollah for destruction, retaliate against Syria and Iran if they refuse to cut all ties to Hezbollah, move militarily to overthrow Saddam Hussein. Failure to attack Iraq, the neoconservatives warned President Bush, will constitute an early and perhaps decisive surrender in the war on international terrorism. Our purpose in writing is to assure you of our support as you do what must be done to lead the nation to victory in this fight. Implied, according to Pat Buchanan, a conservative of a different stripe, is a threat to end support if Bush does not widen the war. Thus, among the signers is Richard Perle, chairman of Bush's own defense policy board, and another signer, foreign policy scholar, Bill Bennett. Bill, sit down, have some food.
No one likes us, I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. Asia's crowded, Europe's too old. Africa's far too hot and Canada's too cold. And South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one, there'll be no one left to blame us. We'll save Australia. Don't wanna hurt no kangaroo. We'll build an all-American amusement park there. They got surfing too. Boom goes London, boom Paris. More room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round, will just be another American town. Oh, how peaceful it will be. We'll set everybody free. Wear a Japanese kimono, baby, be Italian shoes for me. They all hate us anyhow. So let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.
We're back, and just to remind you again, coming up on Tuesday, the president of Egypt, Hosni Mubarak, and the great Victor Moon. Now, we've been closing our shows with a song, an inspirational moment or two. And today we welcome back in our Los Angeles studio the former lead singer of the hugely successful boy band Boys R Us, Dewey Gordon. Dewey, good to see you again. Last time you were here, you had a song about Elian Gonzalez.
That's right, Larry. Let Elian Stay was the tune.
Mm-hmm.
And while, of course, it didn't succeed in keeping young Elian Gonzalez in this country, it sure did succeed in moving a lot of units.
Yeah, well, you're here to sing a new song tonight, Dewey,
mm-hmm.
just being released as a single.
Yes, sir, Mr. King. It's called Where's your flag? Mm-hmm. You know, I feel very strongly that as a former member of a very successful so-called boy band, a term, mm-hmm. by the way, that I'm very proud of, yeah. that I have an obligation not only to help out the firefighters and the rescue workers in New York.
They're getting the proceeds of this record?
Better yet, Larry, yeah. they're getting 100,000 free copies of the record. Yeah. But I also have an obligation to... You know, to show the American people that Dewey Gordon is a serious artist with something serious to say, uh-huh. something that I hope helps to heal old divisions as well as create some new ones.
Okay, we just got a minute left, Dewey.
Okay, well, I just want to say, Larry, that this song is straight from my heart. Not that every other song I've done hasn't been as well, but, you know.
Even more from the heart.
That's right. Yeah.
Dewey Gordon.
Oh, your shelves, they're stocked with goodies. But being in your star is such a drag. 'Cause the red, white, and blue is nowhere in view. Hey, where's your flag? Yeah, your hotel, oh, so very charming. And you know, I really hate to nag. But there's gonna be hissing. Old Glory is missing. Hey, where's your flag? Where's your flag? It doesn't sit in your window. Doesn't fly from your roof. Where's your flag? You say you love your country, but how about some proof? Oh, it could be a banner or a poster. It could be a pin of the Cal or a coaster. But before I buy tires or a toaster, where's your flag? Where's your flag? You know, we got to keep the good times moving. We can't let the economy sag. But before my credit card gets swiped, I gotta get stars and stripes. Hey, where's your flag? Those new cars, they look great in your showroom. Can't even look at the tag. Francis Scott Key, yeah, he said it for me. Hey, where's your flag? Where's your flag? It doesn't sit in your window. It doesn't fly through the roof. Oh, where's your flag? You say you love your country. Well, how about some proof? It could be a banner, a poster, a pin, a decal, but before I buy fryers or a roaster, where's your flag? Where's your flag? Where's
Huey Gordon, Where's Your Flag? It's a new single coming out, this week, huh?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Dewey, just a couple seconds left. You got a prayer for America?
Just that every business establishment that doesn't care enough to fly the flag moves to Afghanistan, Larry. It's not a lot to ask.
Thanks, Dewey. We'll see you tomorrow night. A distinguished panel on the dangers of chemical and biological warfare taking your phone calls, along with Peter Drinkwater, author of the new book, The World's 100 Greatest Delis, from Los Angeles. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, in a study that may explain why some people have a powerful emotional response to music, researchers have found that music can stimulate the same parts of the brain as food and sex. Quote, people are now using music to help them deal with sadness and fear, said Dr. Anne Blood, I'm sorry. A researcher at Massachusetts General Hospital in Charlestown, Mass. We're showing in our study that music is triggering systems in the brain that makes them feel happy, unquote. That's right. Scientists have proved music can make you happy. Ladies and gentlemen, I hate to say it, but that concludes this edition of the show. I'd love to stay here all day with you, but your local station won't let me, nor will I. So the program will return next week at the same time over these same stations? ? Over NPR worldwide throughout Europe? Maybe. On the NPR, on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan? Possibly. Around the world through Armed Forces Radio? I seriously doubt it. On shortwave, WBCQ, the planet, 7.415. Why not? What else are they going to do? And on your computer, whenever you want it, at www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like Dan Rather learning a little bit more about the situation, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show Internet Services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, the satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.